Chapter 25. Said he, "But Count Tresker has shown himself my friend, and I think my character is safe in his keeping. Nor will it be any news to him that I frequent the company you name." She threw back her head with a laugh. "B-boy," she cried, "you are blinder even than I fancied. Do you know why it was that the Duke summoned you to Pianura? Because he wished his party to mold you to their shape, in case the regency should fall into your hands. And what has Tresker done? Shown himself your friend, as you say, won your confidence, encouraged you to air your liberal views, allowed you to show yourself continually in the bishop's company, and to frequent the secret assemblies of freethinkers and conspirators and all that the Duke may turn against you, and perhaps name him regent in your stead. Believe me, cousin," she cried with a mounting urgency, "you never stood in greater need of a friend than now. If you continue on your present course, you are undone. The church party is resolved to hunt down the Illuminati, and both sides would rejoice to see you made the scapegoat of the Holy Office." She sprung up and laid her hand on his arm. "What can I do to convince you?" she said passionately. "Will you believe me if I ask you to go away, to leave Pianura on the instant?" Odo had risen also, and they faced each other in silence. There was an unmistakable meaning in her tone. A self-revelation so simple and ennobling, that she seemed to give herself as hostage for her words. "Ask me to stay, cousin, not to go," he whispered, her yielding hand in his. "Ah, madman," she cried, "not to believe me now. But it is not too late, if you will still be guided." "I will be guided, but not away from you." She broke away, but with a glance that drew him after. "It is late now, and we must set forward," she said abruptly. "See, come to me tomorrow early. I have much more to say to you." The words seemed to be driven out on her quick breathing, and the blood came and went in her cheek like a hurried messenger. She caught up her riding hat, and turned to put it on before the Venice mirror. Odo, stepping up behind her, looked over her shoulder to catch the reflection of her blush. Their eyes met for a laughing instant, then he drew back deadly pale, for in the depths of the dim mirror he had seen another face. The Duchess cried out and glanced behind her. "Who was it? Did you see her?" she said trembling. Odo mastered himself instantly. "I saw nothing," he returned quietly. "What can your highness mean?" She covered her eyes with her hands. "A girl's face," she shuddered, "here in the mirror behind mine, a pale face with a black traveling hood over it." He gathered up her gloves and riding whip, and threw open the door of the pavilion. "Your highness is weary, and the air here insalubrious. Shall we not ride?" he said. Maria Clementina heard him with a blank stare. Suddenly she roused herself and made, as though to pass out, but on the threshold she snatched her whip from him, and, turning, flung it full at the mirror. Her aim was good, and the chiseled handle of the whip shattered the glass to fragments. She caught up her long skirt, and stepped into the open. "I brook no rivals," said she with a white-lipped smile. "And now, cousin," she added gaily, "to horse." 2.15. Odo, as in duty bound, waited the next morning on the Duchess, but word was brought that Her Highness was indisposed, and could not receive him till evening. He passed a drifting and distracted day. The fear lay much upon him that danger threatened Gamba and his associates, yet to seek them out in the present conjuncture might be to play the stalking horse to their enemies. Moreover, he fancied the Duchess not incapable of using political rumors to further her private caprice, and scenting no immediate danger, he resolved to wait upon events. On rising from dinner, he was surprised by a summons from the Duke. The message, an unusual one at that hour, was brought by a slender pale lad, not in His Highness's service, but in that of the German physician Heiligenstern. The boy, who was said to be a Georgian rescued from the Grand Seigneur's galleys, and whose small oval face was as smooth as a girl's, accosted Odo in one of the remoter garden alleys with the request to follow him at once to the Duke's apartment. Odo complied, and his guide lowered the head with an air of unconcern, as though not wishing to have his errand guessed. As they passed through the tapestry gallery preceding the gentleman's antechamber, footsteps and voices were heard within. Instantly the boy was by Odo's side, and had drawn him into the embrasure of a window. A moment later Tresker left the antechamber, and walked rapidly past their hiding place. As soon as he was out of sight the Georgian led Odo from his concealment, and introduced him by a private way to the Duke's closet. His Highness was in his bedchamber, and Odo, on being admitted, found him, still in dressing gown and nightcap, kneeling with a disordered countenance before the ancient picture of the Last Judgment that hung on the wall facing his bed. He seemed to have forgotten that he had asked for his kinsman, for on the latter's entrance he started up with a suspicious glance, and hastily closed the panels of the picture, which, as Odo now noticed, appeared to conceal an inner painting. Then, gathering his dressing gown about him, he led the way to his closet, and bade his visitor be seated. "I have," said he, speaking in a low voice, and glancing apprehensively about him, "summoned you hither privately, to speak on a subject which concerns none but ourselves. You met no one on your way?" he broke off to inquire. Odo told him that Count Tresker had passed, but without perceiving him. The Duke seemed relieved. "My private actions," said he querulously, "are too jealously spied upon by my ministers. Such surveillance is an offense to my authority, and my subjects shall learn that it will not frighten me from my course." He straightened his bent shoulders and tried to put on the majestic look of his official effigy. "It appears," he continued, with one of his sudden changes of manner, "that the Duchess's uncle, the Duke of Monte Loro, has heard favorable reports of your wit and accomplishments, and is desirous of receiving you at his court." He paused, and Odo concealed his surprise behind a profound bow. "I own," the Duke went on, "that the invitation comes unseasonably, since I should have preferred to keep you at my side. But his Highness's great age, and his close kinship to my wife, through whom the request is conveyed, make it impossible for me to refuse." The Duke again paused, as though uncertain how to proceed. At length he resumed. "Will not conceal from you that his Highness is subject to the fantastical humors of his age. He makes it a condition that the length of your stay shall not be limited. But should you fail to suit his mood you may find yourself out of favor in a week. He writes of wishing to send you on a private mission to the court of Naples, but this may be no more than a passing whim. I see no way, however, but to let you go, and to hope for a favorable welcome for you. The Duchess is determined upon giving her uncle this pleasure, and in fact has consented in return to oblige me in an important matter." He flushed and averted his eyes. "I name this," he added with an effort, "only that Her Highness may be aware that it depends on herself whether I hold to my side of the bargain. Your papers are already prepared, and you have my permission to set out at your convenience. Meanwhile, it were well that you should keep your preparations private, at least till you are ready to take leave." And with the air of dignity he could still assume on occasion, he rose and handed Odo his passport. Odo left the closet with a beating heart. It was clear that his departure from Pianura was as strongly opposed by someone in high authority as it was favored by the Duchess, and why opposed, and by whom he could not so much as hazard a guess. In the web of court intrigues it was difficult for the wariest to grope his way, and Odo was still new to such entanglements. His first sensation was one of release, of a future suddenly enlarged and cleared. The door was open again to opportunity, and he was of an age to greet the unexpected like a bride. Only one thought disturbed him. It was clear that Maria Clementina had paid high for his security, and did not her sacrifice, whatever its nature, constitute a claim upon his future? In sending him to her uncle, whose known favorite she was, she did not let him out of her hand. If he accepted this chance of escape he must hereafter come and go as she bade. At the thought, his bounding fancy slunk back humbled. He saw himself as Tresker's successor, his sovereign's official lover, taking up again, under more difficult circumstances, and without the zest of inexperience, the dull routine of his former bondage. No, a thousand times no, he would fetter himself to no woman's fancy. Better find a pretext for staying in Pianura, affront the Duchess by refusing her aid, risk his prospects, his life even, than bow his neck twice to the same yoke. All her charm vanished in this vision of unwilling subjection. Disturbed by these considerations, and anxious to compose his spirits, Odo bethought himself of taking refuge in the bishop's company. Here at least the atmosphere was clear of mystery. The bishop held aloof from political intrigue, and breathed an air untainted by the odium theologicum. Odo found his lordship seated in the cool tessellated saloon which contained his chiefest treasures, marble busts ranged on pedestals between the windows, the bronze Venus Callipyge, and various tables of Petra Commessa set out with vases and tazzas of antique pattern. A knot of virtuosi gathered about one of these tables were engaged in examining a collection of engraved gems displayed by a lapidary of Florence, while others inspected a Greek manuscript which the bishop had lately received from Syria. Beyond the windows, a sedrario or orange walk stretched its sunlit vista to the terrace above the river, and the black cassocks of one or two priests who were strolling in the clear green shade of a pleached alley made pleasant spots of dimness in the scene. Even here, however, Odo was aware of a certain disquietude. The bishop's visitors, instead of engaging in animated disputations over his lordship's treasures, showed a disposition to walk apart, conversing in low tones, and he himself, presently complaining of the heat, invited Odo to accompany him to the grot beneath the terrace. In this shaded retreat, studded with shells and coral and cooled by an artificial wind forced through the conches of marble tritons, his lordship at once began to speak of the rumors of public disaffection. "As you know," said he, "my duties and tastes alike seclude me from political intrigue, and the scandal of the day seldom travels beyond my kitchens. But as creaking signboards announce a storm, the hints and whispers of my household tell me there is mischief abroad. My position protects me from personal risk, and my lack of ambition from political enmity, for it is notorious I would barter the highest honors in the state for a Greek vase or a bronze of Herculaneum, not to mention the famous Venus of Georgian, which, if report be true, His Highness has burned at Father Ignazio's instigation. But yours, Cavalier, is a less sheltered walk, and perhaps a friendly warning may be of service. Yet," he added after a pause, "a warning I can scarce call it, since I know not from what quarter the danger impends. Proximus art at the Acaligan, but there is no telling which way the flames may spread. I can only advise you that the Duke's growing infatuation for his German magician has bred the most violent discontent among his subjects, and that both parties appear resolved to use this disaffection to their advantage. It is said His Highness intends to subject the little prince to some mysterious treatment connected with the rites of the Egyptian priesthood, of whose secret doctrine Heiligenstern pretends to be an adept. Yesterday it was bruited that the Duchess loudly opposed the experiment. This afternoon it is given out that she has yielded. What the result may be, none can foresee. But whichever way the storm blows, the chief danger probably threatens those who have had any connection with the secret societies known to exist in the duchy." Odo listened attentively, but without betraying any great surprise, and the bishop, evidently reassured by his composure, suggested that, the heat of the day having declined, they should visit the new Indian pheasants in his vallery. The bishop's hints had not helped his listener to a decision. Odo indeed gave Cantapresto orders to prepare as privately as possible for their departure, but rather to appear to be carrying out the Duke's instructions than with any fixed intention of so doing. How to find a pretext for remaining he was yet uncertain. To disobey the Duke was impossible, but in the general state of tension it seemed likely enough that both His Highness and the Duchess might change their minds within the next 24 hours. He was reluctant to appear that evening in the Duchess's circle, but the calm, and was not to be evaded, and he went thither resolved to excuse himself early. He found Her Highness surrounded by the usual rout that attended her. She was herself in a mood of wild mirth, occasioned by the drolleries of an automatic female figure which a traveling showman introduced by Cantapresto had obtained leave to display at court. This lively puppet performed with surprising skill on the harpsichord, giving the company, among other novelties, selections from the Maestro Puccini's latest opera, and a concerto of the German composer Gluck. Maria Clementina seemed at first unaware of her kinsman's presence, and he began to hope he might avoid any private talk with her. But when the automaton had been dismissed, and the card tables were preparing, one of her gentlemen summoned him to her side. As usual, she was highly rouged in the French fashion, and her cold blue eyes had a light which set off the extraordinary fairness of her skin. "Cousin," said she at once, "have you your papers?" Her tone was haughty and yet eager, as though she scorned to show herself concerned, yet would not have had him believe in her indifference. Odo bowed without speaking. "And when do you set out?" she continued. "My good uncle is impatient to receive you." "At the earliest moment, madam," he replied with some hesitation. The hesitation was not lost on her, and he saw her flush through her rouge. "Ah," said she in a low voice, "the earliest moment is none too early. Do you go tomorrow?" she persisted. But just then Tresker advanced toward them, and under a burst of assumed merriment she privately signed to Odo to withdraw. He was glad to make his escape, for the sense of walking among hidden pitfalls was growing on him. That he had acquitted himself awkwardly with the Duchess he was well aware, but Tresker's interruption had at least enabled him to get in time. An increasing unwillingness to leave Pianura had replaced his former impatience to be gone. The reluctance to desert his friends was coupled with a boyish desire to stay and see the game out, and behind all his other impulses lurked the instinct of resistance to any feminine influence save one. The next morning he half expected another message from the Duchess, but none came, and he judged her to be gravely offended. Cantapresto appeared early with the rumor that some kind of magical ceremony was to be performed that evening in the palace, and toward noon the Georgian boy again came privately to Odo and requested him to wait on the Duke when His Highness rose from supper. This increased Odo's fears for Gamba, Andriani, and the other reformers, yet he dared neither seek them out in person nor entrust a message to Cantapresto. As the day passed, however, he began to throw off his apprehensions. It was not the first time, since he had come to Pianura, that there had been ominous talk of political disturbances, and he knew that Gamba and his friends were not without means of getting under shelter. As to his own risk, he did not give it a thought. He was not of an age or a temper to weigh personal danger against the excitement of conflict. And as evening drew on he found himself wondering with some impatience if after all nothing unusual would happen. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.